Okay, we covered most of these. Almost every one of these topics has been the topic of an NIH-wide training symposium, and the issues and the documents are covered. And some of them have been covered further back in time. I think the last time we talked about animal welfare was toward the end of the year 2000, as far as something that was on the web, sharing model organisms in the fall of 2004. Data sharing was in the spring of 2003. Women and minorities, I think 2002. Inclusion of children was also with that. Human subjects protections, I haven't got it on this outline yet, but Carlos reminded me of it. There's a new web page that is a compendium of human subjects protections documents and issues, as well as the ESA training page has a section on human subjects protections, which also links to Carlos's web page of documents and advice. We did a training probably 3 or 4 years ago on HIPAA and the privacy rule. Essentially, we at the NIH are not in a position to advise applicants on whether or not their research comes under HIPAA and privacy rules. That comes from their own institution, and it has to do with their billing system and their system of records and whether an individual in their clinical trial can be traced and linked to a data system that would be allowed, that would allow potentially sharing of their private information. This training tells you in much more detail what I just said, but it is something that can be considered in grants, and the cost to research of complying with HIPAA and privacy rules can be a cost item that is allowable. Okay, government oversight. Jamie just covered virtually all of this. Investigation on new drugs. We had done a training on what is your role in monitoring grants for possibility of the off-label use of an agent, a reagent, a medicine on human subjects. Hopefully you're tuned in well enough to the science to know or to be able to ask questions. Part of your job is not just to rely on the review committees picking up potentially dangerous situations or the institutional review boards, but it's also part of your job as a program officer to protect the humans that are in applications or in research that are funded in your portfolio. That's still one more chance to catch a potential problem. We had a training on human embryonic stem cells and what that policy is, and now that's becoming a fairly old policy dating back to August of 2001. But it's still up front. As you know, many of the states are starting programs for supporting stem cell research. Jamie covered progress reports. There will be more training on reporting scientific misconduct when you get to the ESA seminars. However, it is mentioned in the grants policy statement. That's the first link here. Conflict of interest by PIs for their own research is a new and growing issue. It's frowned upon or further for PIs to develop, say, a new pharmacological agent and run the trial on that agent themselves. Okay, they should hand that off to someone else to do with it. What's a congressional, and what do you do with it? Who on our panel has dealt with a congressional inquiry and had to participate in the process of responding to a congressional? Jamie?
Well, they always come from our office of director, And they usually they usually come down around noon and have to be finished by close of business. So you kind of wonder what would have happened if you were on vacation or something. But basically, they usually have to do with a specific area of medical research where there's suddenly a question about how much research is being done in this area, what is being done about it, and what kind of patient populations are involved, and it usually involves putting together a big report in whatever format your director's office says it has to be in. Usually it's a summary of all the grant work that's going on in that area and what's happening with it.
Yes, John?
I just want to make one comment, which I really intended to make when I was talking about doing QVR searches this morning, which is using that tool for your own, you know, purposes to talk to your colleagues about how much we're spending on XYZ is fine. But these inquiries, the transfer of any information, especially information about funding levels, outside, let alone to the in response to congressional inquiries, should never be done on your own. Every institute has absolutely strict rules about how and who may release that information. Don't ever, you know, do one of these little searches, get an answer, and tell somebody. That's strictly for inside NIH discussions, unless you're specifically asked by the person at your institute who's authorized. So don't freelance on that, and then let the information out.
Okay. This is approximately the time of year, as I recall, where you're supplying your institute director with tidbits for congressional testimony, such as reporting highlights from your own portfolio as a means of justifying your institute's or center's budget. Who's been asked to provide highlights of your portfolio? Who keeps track of your highlights as the progress reports and papers come out so that you're all ready to go with this information when it's requested? Okay, this is something to do. It also intellectually helps you keep track of what's most important in your portfolio. If you set up a file in your computer, your email, somewhere, of highlights, and when you read something, clip it out, because usually it's in a written form on your computer, not like in paper and pencil like we used to have to do this. Keep those as a highlight file, and that way you'll have your work done as you go, searchable in that document because of the way you've created it, that you ease and speed your ability to respond to requests for highlights at congressional testimony time. Obtaining clearance for a grant to foreign institutions that is tied up with deciding whether to fund a grant from a foreign institution. Is it supporting a piece of research good for the American public that can't be done here in the U.S.? The world's expert is in Czechoslovakia or England. They have techniques that we haven't adopted here yet. You can justify grants to foreign institutions, but the money that goes out has to be cleared by the State Department. And I believe the form is the 1820. And there's an electronic system now set up through the Fogarty International Center. And I don't know that it's in the outline here, but we have links to a training PowerPoint on the website for today's course that you can open up. And that will take you through how to use this electronic resource and how to work with the Fogarty Center for foreign grants. How do you handle, let's see, other hot topics? Say you hear wind of a scandal, scientific misconduct, fraud, or misuse of funds. What do you do with these? Do we have some examples of processes that you go through that you've seen? Anybody want to talk from your experience?
Well, we have had a couple of situations where either it appeared to us or it was reported to us. And, you know, frequently it is the program person who gets the first call. And the path is very, very clear. First of all, not to discuss it with anybody else at all, except the person that's designated at your institute, typically it'll be the person who's like the director of extramural activities. There'll be one person. And that's the one topic that you don't discuss in the hallway, you don't mention it to your colleagues. You know, when PIs are just being difficult, or if, you know, God forbid they're ill or something like that, sometimes you talk to your colleagues about the situation. But this is the one situation where you don't do that.
Scientific misconduct, that is.
Yeah, you go directly to the designated officer, tell
them. Research integrity officer.
And then don't do anything else. Don't follow up on it. Don't investigate. Don't mention it. Just step away, and everything else then follows, because the rights of the person who's been accused have to be protected, the rights of the whistleblower have to be protected, and absolutely the smallest number of people knowing is the best way for that to happen.
When there's an allegation of fraud or misuse of funds, you work with your grants management staff. They're the ones who know what allowable costs are. They know how to plug into the system for investigating, if necessary, an unallowable cost. Someone may tell you that a grantee has spent money on something that's unallowable. Grants management can begin to follow that up.
They're the ones who authorize the audits. And that's usually the best way to determine if something happened. And don't the audits don't come from the institute. They come from
Office of Inspector General in the department. Right. Complainers and wheedlers. Now, I didn't correct the spelling of wheedle on the slide set in your handout, but we're getting there. What's my grants priority score? Well, you know now with the electronic systems, and as Jana had told you, that the Commons is now the source of finding out priority scores. Summary statements aren't being mailed anymore. That should be just about stopped now. And really is the applicant should be urged to read their summary statement. It's not really your job to, after attending a review meeting, to call up all the applicants in your portfolio and tell them that night what the fate of their application was. You may see that as providing a service, but it can be a disservice, because your understanding of what was said may not jive with what's in the summary statement, which is the official document carrying that information. And if what you say is radically different than the summary statement, then it's going to be embarrassing, because you don't know which of these grantees is the best friend of your institute director and will, 5 minutes later, call them up, give them an earful, not supported by the summary statement later. You can get in big trouble. You may never see an initiative of your idea or choosing see the light of day. Ever. Okay, so if you want to be effective in your job, be careful, right? So you have to put them off, the complainers and the wheedlers, like Dennis said. Listen to them, let them cool down, let them come back again. For wheedlers now, because of the electronic systems, Just in a few days or in a few weeks, they'll have their summary statement. I know that CSR is trying to get all the summary statements done in 30 days, and I don't know if the institutes are following that lead yet, or whether CSR is entirely keeping up with that, or for how many more cycles they'll be able to keep up with that. In due time, the summary statement will be out. Now, what if the grantee likes you, and you've been very helpful, you've gotten to know them through the personal relationship kind of thing that Dennis was talking about, they want to give you a present, they want to take you out to dinner, how much can you accept? Should you accept? What can you do? Do we have some examples of friendly grantees? They're in town for a review meeting, they want to take you out to dinner. What's the easiest thing to say? Who knows this answer?
Let's go Dutch.
Let's go Dutch. It's so easy to say, no, rules, we got rules, I'm just going to pay myself. I think they pay us all enough so that we can go out to dinner now and again without our children having to go without shoes to school. You know, there's, you should be able to handle this, and you got to eat anyway, right? There is ethics training, and everyone has to take ethics training. Otherwise, they unplug your computer. Oh, what a good thing. And you'll be reminded of this. I am every year. I'm usually tardy. And eventually, you get your ethics training taken. Additional resources. Like Carlos mentioned, the Office of Extramural Research homepage. I would click on this and open it, but this computer won't go to the web, and the podium computer got stuck on ICO. But you can go and look at that and see the wealth of materials that are there and bookmark these. Someone's a question in the back?
I just have a question about...
if it's detailed, you can use the microphone so we don't miss the context that you're...
I'll try to...
It won't go to anybody watching on record, so... Okay, she's asking about a CRADA, which is a Cooperative Research and Development application, and who owns the intellectual property for that. Carlos, can you talk to us about that?
Not really.
Not really, okay.
The main issue is that it's usually intramural staff that's involved with a company. That's the usual type of thing, and so there's... The Office of Technology Transfer is the one who has the rules for that, okay? And so there has to be some agreements made in terms of the intellectual property, okay?
I do understand, though, that more extramural staff such as yourselves are engaging in CRADAs for helping support research and provide, say, drugs for a clinical trial. And your technology transfer office locally can help you with that as well. There's also a technology transfer office in the Office of Policy for Research Administration, OPRA. There you can talk to J.P. Kim, who'd be happy to help you with the questions that your own technology transfer officials at your institute may be stuck on. The Program Officials and Project Officers Forum pop-up webpage, Carlos has been very good about populating that with links to resources and advice and summaries, that and the minutes of those meetings are a good resource for keeping up with what's happening in program. I mentioned early on the Grants Management Infonet. The minutes of the Grants Management Advisory Committee, GMAC, are also a huge resource that you can get most of your questions answered there just by searching in that. The GMAC also has a link session, which if you haven't looked at this, it opens a lot of doors as well. There's a how-to section there, which, again, gives you more background on how to approach problems. Now, we have time today to hear more of your questions, and I'd like you to use the microphones and bring up any other questions you have about the program job, things that have been bugging you, things you've needed help with, things you didn't understand or need more background on. Now's the time to ask these questions. Have we answered all your questions?
I wanted to highlight one thing. Previously, there was discussion about gaps in your portfolio, And how many of you are tuned into the ENS system? Okay. Three or four or five. Okay. The ENS system is an electronic notification system that we have, so that whenever an institute wants to issue a program announcement or an RFA, it has to be posted in this particular system. And so once it's posted, then everyone, all the institutes have a chance to comment on it and see if they want to participate in it. Okay? Now, sometimes it's too late for the budget cycle of your institute. And sometimes you'll see notices in the guide where an institute now has decided to join something, okay, afterwards. And so this is one way to keep in touch of if there's a gap in your area, it might be in somebody else's too, and they've taken the lead in issuing a program announcement or an RFA, and if you can collaborate, it'll help you fill your gap as well as theirs. And as you look at the guide, you'll see that there are more and more announcements and what do they call it, funding opportunities now. But you'll see that more and more of them have more and more institutes attached to them, okay? And that's what people are doing because of the way science is going, and you just can't have a simple, necessarily simple area. It may be an integrated area, and you can participate in that way. Question over there?
Can you provide a little more information as far as how you get to that?
Yeah. If you go to the OER intranet, okay, and you can do that from actually from the NIH homepage. If you go to the employee thing and then look under table of contents, OER intranet, it'll have the link there. I would recommend you have that as a bookmark if you can, okay? I don't think it's there's a link to it from the OER public page, but maybe we ought to have one there, you know? And that, if the way it's organized is that there's usually one person in each institute which is responsible for monitoring that closely and then passing the word out to other people if there's a potential of participating, okay? And so that's the type of information that might be helpful to you.
I'd like also to point out, if you haven't caught on yet, the electronic grant application system through e-grants, maybe if you've got SBIRs, you've dealt with this, or the R13s or R15s. But on the 1st of June, the R03s and R21s and R33s are coming in electronically. And that's like 6,000 applications are expected. And often they're new or younger or less experienced investigators, and they're going to need your help. And who here attended the training on January 11th on the 424? And how many program officials did not attend the training? Okay? You're going to have to know this and how it works and be sure that your investigators have registered in the e-grants system, have their DUNS numbers, their CCR numbers. If these terms aren't familiar to you, you have to get familiar with them to be able to start advising grantees on where to find this information. There's MOC 424 applications available. You can look at what it looks like to the applicants. There's a number of frequently asked questions based on the experience with the SBIRs where applicants have had trouble understanding what to fill in various blanks, because the form is not quite like the 398, yet there's a whole set of 398 forms, the PHS 398 appendices to the 424 that they also have to fill out and populate. And if you haven't seen this already, it's by moving documents into the form from PDF files where you actually have to save, the applicant actually has to save their descriptions of various parts of the application as PDF and plug them into the application. There's like at least 14 of these that they have to do, potentially. So we've recorded that training on January 11th. All of the documents and PowerPoints are available to the public and to you. It's all a streaming video, and you can hear our experts from the ERA group give this training. And it's well worth your time. You don't have to do it all in one four-hour period. You can do it in a series of lunch breaks once a week, and then you'll be up to speed on it. Okay? So that's an important thing to do and to get time on. Yes, Jane?
I had a question. Before, even now, as applications come in on paper, the people at CSR look through them to see if they're acceptable for review. And I'm not quite sure how long that process takes. But when you send them in electronically, it's somebody on the other end needs to read them to see if they're acceptable for review, or is it like an electronic check to see if they're acceptable for review?
Well, first of all, there's a checkoff that is done much better than receipt and referral ever did it, unless they spend a lot of time with each application to be sure that the application is validated and it's got all the boxes checked. So to get the 2,500 or so SBIR grants in the door, there's like only a few that got in without being bounced for something missing. And so overall, on the average, each application that was successfully received came in four times. All right, they had 10,000 applications go into e-grants for the output to us of 2,500 applications. All right, so, and usually it's the same set of problems with each one. And so these checks and validations are done by a computer. Now, looking at the length of an application is a little bit harder for the computer to do because of changing things in the PDF documents. Now, whether or not you want to receive it, okay, after they come to CSR, they're still going to receipt and referral for assignment to institutes and study sections. So that's not done yet by computer. Maybe I'm missing.
Did I make the point? The assignments are not done by computer, but there's an entire electronic front end where these, for receipt and referral, to manage the electronic documents, to view them without having to print them on paper, and to make the same decisions that they always did about which IC and which study section.
Yeah, I think so CSR just does it electronically on their computers now. They bring it up.
So there's a front end for receipt and referral, but the conceptual activity of receipt and referral is pretty much the way it always was.
I think there are a number of edit checks for completeness of the documents. Now, maybe there's some additional steps that CSR has done for font size and all that sort of stuff that may still need to be done. But having the document in place, there's an electronic edit check to see if the proper attachments are there.
Yeah, the things that don't have to do with making decisions are being done electronically.
That's right. To be sure all the parts of the application are submitted and the right kinds of things are in each of the boxes of details.
There are pilot tools being developed to see whether it might be possible to do not decisions but recommendations for study section or institute referral. That could be done, a first pass could be done electronically, but that's a long ways off.
Last week, who went to the knowledge management symposium that was in the main auditorium? There, the tools of looking and analyzing portfolios, the landscape of science, matching content of applications to potential reviewers were discussed, and this wasn't the first time it's been discussed at the NIH, but there are ways of matching now content of applications to potential lists of reviewers. At this time, of course, it still takes a human element to actually make the final decisions as to who invite to be a reviewer. The knowledge management tools aren't in shape yet to understand and find gaps in science yet, but that is the eventual course to try to identify scientific needs and understand the totality of any portfolio or the NIH's overall research portfolio with respect to what has been published and what's being worked on. A further effort is to make available in our database not just the funded applications and what was in those, but the unfunded applications. There may be ways to recognize areas of science that are consistently fall below the pay line, fall not good enough to be funded, that may be indicative of areas of science that should be pursued, perhaps by research initiatives.
How many of you read the Post in the last couple of days and you found out the most important piece of information you need to know about the grants, the new e-grant system? Okay. Macintosh, right. Okay. So the article explained that the system they use in e-grants is not Mac-friendly. Okay. So this is going to be a big issue, and it's probably already started, but so we had to delay the acceptance of the R01s, I believe, until next year while they still work out these bugs. So you need to be tuned in to advising people with Macs on how to get into the forms.
At the end of December, there was the Citrix server solution that makes a virtual PC on a Macintosh that allows
them to
submit.
Sounds good until you're the PI having to do it.
Okay.
Okay? That's what the article was about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to make sure to highlight one facet of our conversation here that hasn't been explicated. It has to do with ethics. All of you will have ethics training through your ICs. I have struggled with ethics of my position and the regulations and the rules and the laws that govern it. And my message to you is that the rule of thumb is that the appearance of conflict of interest is, in fact, the same as conflict of interest. If there is an appearance, if you suspect an appearance, just don't do it. And to get information, each of the institutes has a deputy ethics officer. In our institute, that's a deputy director. Go to them ahead of any potential conflict of interest. Be aware of what the rules are. Your life will be easier. And don't allow the rules and the regulations to frustrate you. This is not academia. This is not laissez-faire.
Any other comments? Okay. Now, if you're viewing on the video cast and you want to have a certificate for doing this, you have to email me, Chuck Selden, saying that I view the video cast and study the materials, which is more than a four-hour investment in time. You should go deeper into the materials and report to me that you've studied this course. Those of you here, if you haven't signed up outside, we don't know whether you've taken the course. If you missed signing up 2 weeks ago and you were here, make a note on that and we'll catch you up, okay? Be sure that you go back into the course materials for more depth on things that we showed you but did not cover exactly. I believe there's a course evaluation in the front of your notebook for core number 2, which we're in, and you can fill that out with your comments and suggestions. We do change what the course looks like based on your suggestions if we agree with you. Let's see. Yeah, that's it. Now, I want everyone to thank our faculty today for coming and helping us today.